a challenge to go through a day and only ask questions. Maybe you're listeners of this, you will find at the end of that day that you didn't turn out to be the most interesting person in the room. You were the most interested person in the room, and you're going to get love. You know what I mean? People are like, I really love talking to that guy. I love talking to her. She's so, and all you did was ask the right questions again and again to get people to talk, asking the right questions. You know, that's how this thing works.
After that clip, you know the rest is going to be good. Please take 2 seconds to click the follow or subscribe button on your podcast player. You can set it once and forget tracking down each weekly episode. This makes your life easier and signals to the algorithms that the show should be recommended to other listeners. A simple act that can have an outsized positive impact on others. Before we get started, I'm following up on the promised updates mentioned last week. The link is now live on the Curated Questions website, allowing you, the worldwide questioning community, to record a clip of up to 90 seconds for potential inclusion into our weekly episodes. The current questions are, what question had a significant positive impact on your life? And what is your right now question? The primary motivation is to encourage a conversation and provide a platform for you to share with the greater community. Additionally, at long last, I will be launching my newsletter that will hit your email inbox every 2 weeks. The format will consist of one quote, 2 questions, and a LinkedIn article I will have published over the past 2 weeks. For the first 3 months, the newsletter will coincide with episode drops on Thursday. The simple sign-up is on the Curated Questions homepage, and welcome to the community. Now, let's get to it. Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community. Greetings. Ken Woodward here. Welcome back to another episode of Curated Questions. Together, we engage inquisitive humans about how they use questions to navigate and make sense of our world. I am a fellow traveler and pilgrim on this journey, and I'm glad you are here. Today's conversation is with Mari Rogo. Mari is all about storytelling. He is the CEO of the Rip Media Group and creator of the story-to-sales methodology that's generated over $150 million in trackable revenue for clients. I appreciate the tagline, "Your brand will thrive or die based on the story you tell." Mari's unique journey spans high-tech success and Hollywood storytelling. He built his business career at companies like Avaya, Lucent Technologies, and Geotel, a startup that sold to Cisco Systems for over $1 billion. He then pivoted to Hollywood, serving as executive producer for feature films like Bedrooms and Enter the Dangerous Mind, working with industry legends, including the creator of the Batman franchise. Today, Mari combines business acumen with cinematic storytelling to help Fortune 1000 companies like Comcast, Kaiser Permanente, and Ben & Jerry's create compelling brand narratives. His approach recognizes that in our noise-filled marketplace, every company must master storytelling to survive and thrive. Mari has proven that great stories don't just entertain, they sell. He's written several books, with his latest on the horizon being Your Story Can Be Your Superpower, Selling in an AI World. He's been featured in Forbes, Inc., and Entrepreneur magazines. Mari, welcome to Curated Questions.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely. It's a joy. So I always like to start at the same point. And that is, when did you first understand the power of questions?
I would say it was a little later than most people might think. It wasn't when I was a child, wasn't in high school. It was later. So it was, interestingly, it was the same question that was asked to me in 2 different experiences, 15 years apart, and then it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So the power of it hit when I was in my first job, basically a shy kid, or was a shy kid. Nobody would think that today, being on podcasts and public speaking and all these things. But really inside, just kind of a shy kid in there. I thought if I learn how to sell and I learn how to represent products, I get people to, you know, come onto my side of the table and they buy a product, I won't ever be hungry. I won't be shoveling coal into the furnace like I did when I grew up, right? So we lived in a very cold place, and that's how we got the heat. We shoveled coal down in the basement at 2 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. It was not great. It was not great. So, see, it was kind of funny. Sorry, you asked me a question. I'm going on a tangent.
No, we're all good.
All right. So, but let me tell you. So 2 o'clock in the morning shift, I could handle. The 5 a.m., oh, that was tough. And at 5 a.m., I'm going to put twice as much in there. I'm just going to heat this place up. And then the whole family, we're all sweating an hour later because now it's 90 degrees. And then we all open our windows. And then then an hour later, we're freezing again. And they're screaming my name because they know what I did. So anyway, never wanted to live like that. This is why I wanted to move to Los Angeles, why I wanted to move to California, why I now live in Miami. I don't want to be around that kind of freezing cold. The question that happened was, I was with an early sales call, an early client, and I'm kind of going through the standard questions for AT&T back then. So it was my first job, my first real job, going through asking the questions, and the person just kind of stopped and looked right at me, the business owner. Mari, why is this important to you? And nobody had ever asked that. Why is selling this telecommunications equipment important to me? And I was stunned. I didn't want to go with the, well, it's because this is my job and I fought to get this job and I want to do well in my job. Those are terrible answers. And I knew that was why the person was asking, but the answer I thought had a lot of gravity. So I thought about it just, you know, a few seconds. And I believe I said, because this matters to you, because I can actually make a difference in your business. And before, you know, this job, you know, yes, I may have been serving food or I was doing this, you're working my way through college. This really makes a difference. And all the training that I put in, everything that I've learned, all the competitors that are out there, this really is the best choice. I feel it's important to you. That's why it matters to me. Was that a good answer? You know, something like that. And he looked at me and he kind of smiled and he said, "That is a good answer. We'll call you next week and we'll let you know what we decide. We're meeting with three other companies." And he did call back and he did say yes. And he said, "Come on out here with the contract." It was wonderful. And he said, "I asked you that question for an important reason. I want to know why you do what you do, because we're going to be talking together for years. I'm going to have upgrades. We're going to grow. I'm going to change my business. I need to know that you care and that you're going to be there. You're not just there for a paycheck." And I thought, "That's amazing." He said, "Do you golf?" And I said, "A little bit." He said, "Let's golf." So started a partnership, started a relationship. And it was a really great question. So again, that meant a lot to me at that time. And that's when the power of questions really set in and truly took me on a different path in my career. But that same question was asked of me years later when I was in Hollywood. So the same thing happened. We were pitching a series to a company with Sony. And so the executive producer of the company, basically is how they work it, he asked me, "Why does this matter to you?" And it rang bells. Wow, he really wants to know. Again, now in this relationship, because you will be with that person, you will be talking for months and years, and they need to know, you are invested in this. You care about this. This isn't just some story you want to sell so that somebody picks it up, writes the script and brings it to the screen. And then you get to go to all kinds of neat, you know, red carpet parties and things like that. That's not the reason. You need this story to be told. And there's a reason behind it. And that's going to be a 5-year and maybe even 10-year journey. Wow. To get these stories made. So that's what my cousin taught me. He holds the rights to Batman, bought it when it was almost a joke in the late 70s. Nobody thought there was going to be a dark Batman, you know, kind of this graphic novel-esque look and feel these stories. And so he bought the rights to it and still owns them and is in partnership with the family and so forth that owns it and wrote the first Batman. So why is this important to you was probably the most impactful question and opened my eyes to why questions really, really matter.
Wow.
That's a great story, and it's cool how it came back around in such a significant way all those years later.
Yeah. I certainly didn't expect that. I will say this. What happened after that question, I went back and I looked at our training materials, right? I mean, look, you know, AT&T is one of the best. Again, this was corporate sales, going meeting with businesses and call centers and all these big products that we were selling. So there was a long discovery process. And I looked through and everything that we were supposed to ask was leading to a feature, basically something that they had built that would help a company in some way or another. But they didn't ask and they didn't go to the "and that means." And so this is what I train people on now in sales, which is, you know, I ask this question and I get an answer. And that means what? And that does what? And how does that work for you? You know, so that extra add-on, that's really what matters. And I wasn't getting any of that. So we did well, but I came across a book and inspired me to write once I learned all kinds of different systems out there and how to tell stories, ask my questions or chapters of these books that I wrote, the right questions to ask at the right time so that you get a story back. You can't get a great story without asking a question first, typically, right? And you can't give a great story unless somebody's curious. So it's all about eliciting curiosity and you know, gaining approval for that, I'd say 20 seconds. And if it goes well, you've bought in for another, as a listener, another 60 seconds. And if it's really, I'll give you one more minute. All right, I'll give you four more, right? If you, there's some spots, you know, that you can go past. So that book was amazing. Neil Rackham did research on thousands of salespeople and the questions that they ask. I would say iconic in my career and opened a whole new door. So there's four types of questions, and then SPIN, S-P-I-N is the acronym. And so situation questions, you know, how are things now? How do you do it today? That kind of thing. Problem questions, good questions to ask. And what's the problem that you're seeing? One of my questions that I always ask comes from that, which is, what's the problem we're trying to solve? Right, just like talking to a client and my daughter, my wife, like what's the problem we're trying to solve here? If they're going on about something or anybody's going on, like, let's isolate this. Let's see what we can do. But then there's the extra two that most people never get to, which is the I questions, implication. What does that mean? What happens if there's that problem, right? And that's the, and that means, or, and how do you, that kind of a thing. There's implication, but really it's, well, it's costing me time, or it's costing me money, or it's making me frustrated, or I'm very angry. Okay. And then the N is need payoff. What's the need? What's the payoff if we can solve that problem and those implications from that problem? But you don't just say, oh, we can solve that and it'll do this. That's like the Shinola salesman in 1958 or something. And so before my time, before your time, from what I've heard. So it's situation, problem, implication of that problem, and the need, the payoff, if you solve that problem. But you ask these, you frame them as questions. That book transformed my career. I truly, within about a 2-3 months, became the top salesperson. And in my mind, I wasn't a salesperson anymore at all. I became a consultant. I was consulting with these folks. I was finding out real problems. I wasn't positioning these phone systems or these servers or these whatever. I was finding out what the real issues were. And so what started happening is now I'm selling a lot, but I'm also able to bring in partners. Like, you know, they have a problem. I can solve this piece of it. But if I make a phone call to these folks or these folks, we can come in there and they can solve the other part that I can't. That's why I'm thinking I'm the consultant here. I'm not some salesperson. And it really transformed my thinking around things, transformed the revenue we brought in, the customers that I sold, the memories that I have. So I just continued that on and kept learning more and more, and then developed really my own system, as you talked about, story to sales methodology. But that was the beginning. And it was an all praise. If I ever get to meet him, I definitely want to shake his hand and give him a hug, maybe.
Absolutely. Now, there's a stigma associated with sales, So you had said early on that you knew if you could sell that you would never be hungry or have to shovel coal. Where did you get that understanding? How did you tie sales to I won't have to go hungry?
You actually touched something inside of me just asking that question that nobody's ever asked. So, well, multiple reasons in multiple ways. At that time, whatever, was like 21, 22, I wasn't an engineer, didn't have that mindset, or at least not yet. I didn't have great science knowledge, so I wasn't going to become a physician. I wasn't going to become an engineer. I could create things and invent some things, but there are ideas on paper. I've always kept a tablet, probably for decades now, different things I'd love to invent. Some of them I now have, but you know, always ideas. But back then, I'm 22 and I had, you know, I had no resources. I didn't have these contacts. There was no network, but I really didn't have the one main resource, which was money at all. I didn't have any. Negative. I had debt because I went and put myself through school and things like that. And I certainly had help from my family and support, and they were, you know, great and helped as much as possible, but it was a lot more than that. So what could I do? Well, I knew that I was really interested in people. I was really interested in helping people, and I couldn't figure out, is there a job for me? And I was teaching karate at the time, so I really liked teaching. Like being in front of people, even though, again, I wasn't Mr. Gregarious, that kind of thing, but I certainly could get along with folks and teach and influence. And I started feeling, what job looks like this? Because I don't want to be a karate instructor for the rest of my life. And started thinking, well, and I literally kind of made a list, like pros and cons and different jobs. Who stands in front of people and gets to instruct? Who gets to, you know, okay, a teacher. But I didn't really want to continue teaching. I wanted to do something, I'd say, a little bit more influential, a little bit more in my mind. Sounds crazy. There's teachers out there thinking I'm nuts right now.
I get that.
In my mind, you know, that would be more appealing. And again, remember, I came from shoveling coal in a $17,000 house, right? So to me, it was, I wanted to have more means, and I didn't see teaching at that time as the way. Teaching now, you know, but back then, what the heck could I do? What could I do? Well, I thought maybe I can figure out how to sell. I can position somebody's product. I can tell their story in a way that they can't yet. I was always able to do that, but didn't think, you know, you can't earn a dime doing that. Maybe I can. Maybe I actually can earn a dime telling stories. And that's what, in my mind, again, I'm a kid in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Hollywood couldn't be further away in, you know, not just in distance, but in mentality, that's a glamorous place, like mythical almost. So always wanted to get there, but I have no idea how to do that. So let me start with, you know, step one. And that was, can I tell a decent story? Can I ask the right questions to get in the door? If I don't know an answer, let me ask more questions. Yeah. And then I'll learn, and then I'll be able to influence, and I'll be able to, you know, kind of sell an idea. So, you know, there were business people around us, you know, family, that kind of thing. And they always like, I'll just send my sales guy out there and he'll do the thing and blah, blah, blah. So I sent my sales guy out and he did this. I kept hearing that, not in a great way. It was never a great, there's always a stigma attached to a salesman, death of a sale everywhere. Right. I mean, it's used cars, death of a sale. I mean, just think of it. And I thought, well, there must be another angle to this. There must be a respected area of sales. And that's why I did what I did, get into corporate sales, more like what I pictured as a consultant, because that seemed to have prestige and some honor and integrity with it.
It's great that you were able to realize that inkling that you had that, A, it could provide, but it also might be different than some of those stereotypes and the like that you had encountered or landed upon when you heard how anybody was talking about just sending out the sales guy to do that work. And you're able to do it differently.
That was, honestly, again, but you're really bringing me back. I didn't, you know, this, I really remember that being a very big part of the decision. Should I pursue this as a career? Should I pursue it as even just a job? And I thought, I will only do it if there's integrity, if there's some prestige isn't the right word, but honor, I think really is the right word. I wasn't going to go sell insurance. Didn't seem right. I wasn't going to go, some of these things that I came across when I was growing up, some of the folks around us, friends of the family, that kind of thing. And there were one or two that did something really cool. And one was, we're still here. My father's friend, he was in advertising. But this is crazy how all this came full circle. Like what I do now. I tell stories for Prada. I mean, I'm in advertising. But I'll never forget this. So I haven't seen anybody. Again, I'm in Pittsburgh. It's steel. It's steel workers. It's blue collar. It's, that's how you do things, and it's hard-nosed, that kind of stuff. And a lot of stories around that I don't need to get into. But I just, I wasn't the annoying little kid, why this, why that, kind of a thing. But I'd always ask, how do you do that? What do you do? When you ask me what I do, all right, I'm working, it's 700 degrees, we're melting iron ore, and that's cool. But wow, how do you do that? And then this one's, it's really funny, the choice I made here, but this guy, he sells toothpaste. I'm like, what? this is my dad telling me. Well, he works for, I believe it was Colgate, or probably still is, but that's his account. So, the commercials that are on TV, I'm like, yes. He said, they come from him. He hires the folks that make those commercials that we see, and that's his client. Like, what do you mean it's his client? He doesn't work for them? No. So he works from agency. That company hires to do these creative, and I'm just blown away. Wait a second. Somebody hires somebody to sell their product. That's where this came from. I was little.
Yeah.
And so my dad knew I, was thought in a different way. So he said, he's going to take me over and he's going to drop. Here's another question story. My gosh, I'm on the right podcast. He's going to take me over. Richard Grinberg is the guy's name. And unfortunately, he passed away not too long ago. But he brought me over to his house. And on the way, I'm getting nervous. I'm getting scared. I'm like, I'm 10, 12, something. It's really early. It's not like a career move. Yeah. But my dad knew there's something here. And I'm getting really scared. I don't know. Again, the guy's got a nice house. It's big. It's, it's green trees. Oh, I'm like, oh my gosh. I don't want to go. You're going. I already called him. You're getting out of this car. and I'm like, what do I? He goes, he's sort of real. Okay. All right. Grab the open the glove compartment, get the pen and the paper. And you're going to ask these questions. And I wrote them all down. And those questions, again, set me on this path. So I went in. What does your job, how did you get into it? Right. And again, wrote these down. This truly became my roadmap for how to get a job. I don't think I was ever placed by a headhunter. I always informational interviewed my way into jobs. I would call people. I would ask them questions about how did they get into what they did? What skills do you need? What experience did you have? What did your first 90 days look like? What's your day to day? What's the person you work with? What's it, again, all around that. And people love talking about themselves. They love somebody that's interested in what they do.
Absolutely.
I promised 20 questions in 30 minutes when I got to be older. Let me ask these questions. I'd love to learn about it. And the ones that, again, later in life, the ones that sounded really interesting, I went back to. Would you mind introducing me to somebody else that does what you do or something similar? I'd like to learn more. That's it. I'm not sending my resume. I'm not saying, can you hire me? I'm interested. But a month or two later, after I sent a hard copy thank you note. Thank you so much for your time. Like, wow, that's different. That's unusual. He's a professional, right? This is nice.
Right.
And I'd ask another question, which is, do you know somebody else that I might be able to talk with about what they do? And so I would do that. And by the third or fourth time, somebody would call back and say, if you're really interested in this, you should talk to them because they have a position open. But I never knew.
Nice.
Right. Or I would... Yeah. see if I could work my way into that company, but it would be truly through these informational interview questions that started with my dad and Richard Grinberg in Pittsburgh when I was 10 years old. These questions have made my career. Thinking back at this, truly did not think this would happen on this podcast, but you're getting me to go back deep here.
Yes. All right. And I do have a bunch of follow-up questions. Great. You mentioned that your dad saw that you had a unique perspective. What was that? How would you describe what that was? What did he see in you that prompted that assessment, do you think?
Pretty restless. Couldn't really sit still. Was not great at sitting down with the books and studying. Obviously asked a lot of questions, but I was really interested in just a few things growing up. One was movies. You know, honestly, movies and TV commercials, I could sing the songs. I knew the tunes, that kind of thing. Wow. I knew this movie. Okay. And people, you know, when I grew up and older, nobody in my town was doing that, but they could name every football player. And I could do some of that as well. Football, yep. Baseball, you know, that kind of thing, hockey. But I'm like, I know this person was in this movie, this is this. That's the voice from this and this. And I somehow it just resonated. And so he encouraged that. Let's go see this movie. Let's go, that kind of a thing. So we encouraged that. So we knew that was of interest and that I was restless. And my mom was always, I would say she was a little more concerned about, am I going to be able to make a living, get along in life? And so yeah. Her comment was always, I don't see you as a 9-to-5er. You know, 9-to-5, you sit down at a desk and you punch in and you do it. You do your accounting for 9 hours and then you plug out or whatever. I don't see you doing something like that. You're gonna want to do something where you can be out and about and with people doing things. And so, again, I was way too young to know what that could look like. But separately, I think they both had ideas on what that could look like. You know, certain types of movies. I loved karate and martial arts and a few other things. His idea was to encourage the best of us, the best that he could, which is a great way to go. My mom's the same way. Like we want you to be happy, but there is also and you've got to be able to make a living.
Food on the table is a good thing. Crime. That is. Yeah. Now, and no idea on this where hopefully your mom is still around or she was able to see some of the success that you've gained by virtue of taking the non-traditional 9-to-5. Is that correct? Has she been able
very
to?
Very much. Yeah. Excellent. So she is. I just talked to her this morning.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you. My dad as well. He's not with us anymore, but he saw some pieces. When I moved to Hollywood and I made the movies, he really didn't get it. Like it was too foreign for him. Yeah. It's great. So your name will be at the movie. Do you make a living doing that? Great that your name will be on it on the big screen, but are you able to eat?
Does a check come with that?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that was a big concern. My mom actually said something, and I'm sure she doesn't remember saying it, but again, this is a different generation. These aren't folks that do a lot of praise. Very little, in fact, but encouraging, certainly. There's no bad feelings, but yeah. She did say something that really appealed to me about maybe 10 years ago. She said, you do some really cool things. And that is high praise. And I mean it. That's high praise from her. That was great. And I was like, that's good enough. I'll take that for 30 years of work.
Well, it's just a lovely story, though, that you have achieved a level of success that your dad is like, I don't know how you do it because you make wonderful things and yet you still get paid. And then your mom also having that reflection to say, wow, because there was clearly no undercutting comment about not making money, you know, to be able to put food on the table. That's a neat story how that kind of came about.
Thanks.
Cool.
Thank you.
Now with Mr. Grinberg, I think that was right.
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah. Grinberg. So that list of questions, were there one or two that you've found beneficial in various capacities as you've gone forward?
That's a great question. Absolutely, yes. And some of them, again, for the informational interviewing, when I suggest to people, you want to go get a job, don't send out 1,000 resumes. Use your LinkedIn and your Facebook and actually talk to people and ask them these questions. there are some questions that I had on that list with the yellow paper and the scratchy pen that I still ask in maybe some different formats today. And they're the how and the what questions. So not so much the why. I was too young for why questions. Who was I to ask them? Like, why do you do this?
That's an interesting insight, by the way. But yeah, keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, maybe it wasn't youth. It was just, you know, but the how and the what. What do you do on a day-to-day basis? What do you like the most? This one is actually still a favorite. And I can use this for anything. What do you like the most about this campaign? What do your clients or your customers like the most about this? Well, they like the blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. What's the aha moment where they say, aha, you do that. Okay, now this is useful. Okay, I get it. I see. Those are the moments. Those are the gems. Again, that seed was planted when I was 10 or whatever. And I think I still just form it in different ways. But I think it's those how, but especially the what questions. What's this like? What's your favorite? What do you dislike? What's not going well? And then now that I've learned, obviously you do little add-ons. There's something I learned over time too. I'd love to add in here, which is the little add-on questions are your, I guess, your double-edged sword. So this side is great. This side's the negative. So asking those add-ons, and you know, look at it then from spin, you look at it like my story to sales methodology. It's basically, tell me a little bit more and tell me why that affects you. How does that affect you? What was the result of that? Okay. All those are great because you're getting more information, hopefully in a way that you can help them. Probably, I don't know, but probably like a therapist would do, right? And what are you telling yourself about that? You know, that, so this is the event, but what's the story you're telling about? You know, what do you say? Blah, blah. So questions, they're just so vital. But what I found is, and again, and this is world of business, but I think also in the world of dating, also in the world of relationships, learning, you know, with my child and you know, that kind of thing, that the more questions you ask, the more curious you are. But on the sales side of things, if you can't provide that solution, stop asking. Because you're just making them more curious, just like you are. And the big thing that I learned was, let's say I'm whichever company, but they say, your competitor has this and that. We really love that. Oh, well, why? Why do you use that? It's like the questions come really easy. Well, how would you use that on a day-to-day? Oh, is there anything bad about it? Yeah, there's nothing bad about it. Well, what's great about it? Like, you're just like, why? Why would you go with them? And they're telling you, and they're justifying in their mind, yeah, we made a really good choice. In fact, so good, we don't need you. So it's, if you're poking and you're pulling the taffy, you know, be careful, because as your interest is up, you're mirroring. And the other person's interest is going to be up, and they might just be proving why what they did was a great choice. Or, you know, maybe it wasn't a good choice. So that's the double-edged sword.
And assuming that there's some hard knocks lessons that was learned.
Sure. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
That's the thing that comes with experience. Yes. Yeah.
Does it make sense? You know what I mean?
It does.
Okay.
It does. So then let's say you're going down that path. And you find out that your competitor has a particular feature or something like that. So sales strategy wise, is this where you kind of pivot and just come back to start asking questions in another direction? Because if they've got the shiny new thing that goes faster or whatever, but you've got other features over here, just strategy wise for sales, is it now just start asking questions? If you know that other company doesn't have as much memory or whatever it is, that now you start asking questions to perhaps enhance the features or find out what the need is regarding the features that you do have?
Yes.
Is that kind of the questioning strategy?
Well, the strategy really is, if you really can't find a pain, you know, and they really are happy with something, you probably need to move on. Yeah. Look, they're happy. They've just told you 15 ways that they're happy with this thing and you couldn't pull out a negative. Maybe they're meeting with you because they had to. Maybe they're meeting with you because they were curious as to what's new out there. But there is something I would caution, which is You don't ever want to sell the features. You always want to sell the benefits and the result. So you never talk about the, you know, you have books behind you there. Like, you know, you could go through and this has 376 pages. Is that a good book? Oh, it must be. It's 376. No, it doesn't mean anything. No, what I got out of this book is these 10 questions that I use every day. And that has transformed me. That's a result. That matters. That book right there did that. The features is it's 376 pages on parchment paper and it uses number 7 ink or whatever it is. Those are features.
Right.
And so you don't want to be ever having that conversation about features. People buy results. They're going to buy on certainly process. They buy the relationship and, you know, who you are and what you care about. And people buy with emotion, even in humongous corporate sales. It's not like this is just for somebody selling an iPad at the store. Yeah. I mean, this is really through and through who we are as people and how we learn. And I'll go on a crazy tangent again. You can just cut this out.
Love them.
All right. Let's go back 10,000 years. We're in whatever hunter-gatherer caves that we're in, you know, that kind of a thing. And the caveman and woman stomp in and what happened? If, you know, we got chased by a mastodon and we almost got killed. Okay, where was that? That's out to the left. Got it. Not going to the left. Right? So the stories were told for lessons, for community, you know, I don't even say really to entertain, but everybody remembers it. Everybody remembers the story. They got chased back by a mastodon. Okay, got it. And that's over that way. We're not going that way. But if they came out and they're like, okay, it was 14 cubits to the left and for, you know, turn right around the oak tree 7 times, you know, whatever it is, they give those features, those little details. Nobody's gonna remember that. That's why PowerPoint slides typically suck. The presentation with all these features are not memorable. Right? Because we remember the story that's told, if it affects us, if it's relatable in some way, you know, if I can relate to that, if I can relate to, I mean, look, you had just asked a couple of questions right at the beginning and I'm, you know, you brought me right back into 30 years ago. That's amazing. The questions open so many doors and then open these stories and it works with everybody for everybody.
What kind of questions are helpful for getting to a story, and this would be for a company or in sales, I guess it's probably more in my mind, conversation wise, it's probably more in the storytelling and some of the different clients that you've done or the like, but up to you. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. It's, you know, again, it's there. The answer is, can you tell me, you know, can you tell me about a time? Can you tell me a scary story about you came on the podcast and nobody was sitting there? Can you tell me about the time you came on and the person didn't have a microphone? Has that ever happened? Right. You know, or their microphone was terrible, yep. You know, that kind of thing.
Yep. Check that. Right? Okay. I failed to hit record, as we mentioned. Yep. Done that. Yep.
Can you tell me about a time that this happened? Or do you have any examples of, you know, again, you don't start there. You don't walk in, sit down and say, you know, can you tell me about this? You know, you want to set the stage a bit. But you want to dig in and get some examples. I really don't like the term, but it's called case studies. They're examples. Give me some examples. Give me some stories about what happened. You don't say, do you have a, I'm asked this and I cringe every time I hear it, but what's your use case? This isn't up to me to tell you what my use case is for your product. Do your homework. Sorry, I don't mean to sound arrogant at all, but like, look, I put years into this, you know, like come and ask me a question, ask me good questions and I will share. Like you literally can are asking me good questions. I'm sharing like an open book, but some people just kind of want you to do all the work for them. So the questions are everything. It's establish that trust, you know, get to know the person, you know, they all get to know and then they like you, then they trust you and then doors open, you know, establish that rapport. And then, can you tell me a time? What happened? There's a really bad question, but there's other ways to frame it. But the bad question is, or the bad version is, what keeps you up at night? What are you struggling with? The better version would be, have you tried to solve that? Have you tried to solve the bad microphone situation? You know, how did that work for you? Do you have any examples of it not working? Let's get in and be specific. So really the questions are going to have elicit a story And what's really cool about the combination of the question delivering the story, which I think is both of our passion, is my stories don't work. My stories literally I'm telling here, but the stories you use in business and to motivate people and to influence, none of them matter unless there's a great question ahead of it so that you can build that connection. So the question starts the connectivity and, you know, between two people and, you know, or even with a group of people, one person to 10,000 if they're speaking. So if you ask the right questions and the person feels and knows that you're interested, then they share. And if you share a story back, you literally own it. And if, let's say it's a customer, I'm your customer. I shared something with you, you told it back to me as a story and sort of a success story. It's in me now. And now when I go to tell my boss why I think you're great and we should work with you, I'm going to share a story. I'm not sharing a feature list because the feature list can be pulled up between Ken's solution and Jane's solution. Well, Jane's solution is a lot longer. Her feature list goes on 50 and his is only 35. So we're just going to go with Jane. But if you're sharing that, no, the reason that he does this is this, and it's, I really can see us working with him. That makes a huge difference. That's how things are done. That's why people make deals on golf courses and things like that you hear about. So the questions and the solutions or the questions and the stories, they have to go hand in hand, in my view.
Please take 2 seconds to click the follow or subscribe button on your podcast player. You can set it once and forget tracking down each weekly episode. This makes your life easier and signals to the algorithms that the show should be recommended to other listeners. A simple act that can have an outsized positive impact on others. One of our mutual heroes, Seth Godin, he talks about in sales, or in one element is whoever you're talking to has to be able to have a story to tell their boss.
Absolutely.
And it's got to be able to add up. It's got to make sense. In having these conversations on all the many layers that are there, one of those layers would be giving the individual that you're talking to a credible story for them to believe, because it's true. We're not making things up, but then they're able to carry that on. As you were just saying, they're able to tell that story to the boss. How do you foster curiosity?
How do I foster curiosity? In myself or in others, my team, clients, or just...
I'll just cheat. Yes. whichever way you want to take it, whatever resonates the most.
What a great question. How do I foster curiosity? The way I foster curiosity is always the questions that I'm asking myself. And by the way, the questions I'm asking myself and the questions that we're all hearing, again, we don't need to get, you know, into deep psychology, but we all have voices in our head running around all the time. If you are able to calm, slow down, you can meditate, whatever it is, I do. And it's crazy the things that's being said in there. Like, wow, I had no idea I was so negative. I thought I was Mr. Positive. Wow. So once you slow down enough to hear the questions that are being asked, then you can say, okay, why am I asking myself the negative version of that? All right. So this is in one way. You know, right. Why didn't I win that project? Or why don't I live in a bigger house or whatever? How can I be grateful for this amazing place I live in? Try that. How can I be grateful for X? What's great about this? And I'm teaching this to my family. I'm teaching it to my daughter, and it's amazing. She came back just recently, and I was telling her about a very tough day. And I came into a meeting. I was supposed to be a spectator, and they literally handed me the meeting and said, okay, Mari, can you run this? And I was, you know, it took me some minutes to get through, and absolutely, I'd cycle. Okay, this is what I'll do. But I said that, and it's like going into school. She's like, why, you know, what happened today? And I, you know, because I was sort of frazzled. And I was like, it's like you walked into school and your teacher said, I'm leaving. It's your turn to teach today. All yours. And walks out. She goes, I'd be great with that. And I
That's beautiful.
I'd be great with that. And then she started telling me all the things, like, yes, that's how you do it. So
that is amazing.
So curious, how did she get there? Yeah, so that curiosity. So that's how I foster that curiosity. So it's asking the questions and then reframing those questions. And just being curious about everything, but really putting that spin on it, because I think our natural tendency is to be negative because we have to survive and we're not sure what's going to happen tomorrow. And if you look at social media and the news and all the different things out there, there's a 70,000 pieces of noise that hit us every single day. And the, and the stat is, you know, our great, great, great grandparents saw in their whole lives the amount of information we see in a week.
Wow.
In a week. So we weren't built for this. We haven't adapted. We have to block and we have to get down to the core. So, so asking yourself the right questions. Why is that amazing? How is that interesting? I love the Japanese, they have these symbols, and we were in Japan last year. So crisis and opportunity are basically together always. So it's, you know, we have a crisis. Oh, it's a crisis. Breaking news. Oh, it's a crisis. You know, that kind of thing. Problem or opportunity. Oh, Silicon Valley's on fire. AI is exploding right now. Where, how are you going to invest? Maybe that's the opportunity. It's, they look at it as there's a crisis. Where's the opportunity? So I do that all the time. So this is changing. What's the opportunity? This happened. What's the opportunity? I didn't like that happened. So what's the opportunity? So always trying to challenge myself to find the best way. And that, I think, has embedded itself into the, as frankly, as being curious all the time.
Has there been any particular insights that have come out of that process that has just radically changed the business for you?
What a great question. Truly adopting that mentality, adopting that mindset, changed my business completely. That's honestly one of the reasons I'm sitting here with you. That's why I wrote that book. I just felt like, okay, this is great. What, 5 years ago? I mean, we're making commercials. I'm doing these, creating these marketing campaigns, helping these companies grow. It's all very cool. I did get to make the movies, right? And and now I get to make mini movies for people and for brands and that kind of thing. But this curiosity of, well, what can I do next? I don't want to just do the same thing for the next, you know, 10 or 15 years. What can I do next? But laying in those questions, well, how else can I frame this? Like, what's great about what I really, what's great about making 1,200 commercials? Okay. You know, I can do those pretty well. Well, I can tell a story pretty well. Well, that must mean that I can take really complex things and PowerPoint presentations that go on for an hour and a half, and I can get it to be understood in 30 seconds. Well, that's a weird little skill that not many people have. But what else can I do here? And so that's what I started just throwing these into a notebook. Okay, how do I do that at this point of a sales cycle? Okay, we do that. What story is needed here? What story is needed here? And I started, and that became the chapters of the book and the format for the book. And it was truly transformational. And I'll throw credit out. I went to a Tony Robbins seminar, not expecting anything, literally expecting to walk in and then walk out a couple hours later saying, okay, well, I did that, but I that was interesting, but I didn't. I walked out 3 days later and said, that was amazing. That he is, you know, that's where sort of the term reframe for that I've been using, you know, comes from. How can I look at this in a different way? You know, highly recommend it. And that was that really, it set me on a new path, a new direction. And it was straight up the questions that he asked of us. And, you know, and again, he's not the guru. He's not the answer, but he pulls the answers out of you if you're open to it.
You mentioned working through questions. So I want to tie that to your list of creative ideas and inventions that you had mentioned previously. Yeah. How do you think those two mash up to create the person that you are?
How the mashing up the inventions, the curiosity?
And, yeah, the curiosity, the inventions, And because where I'm going with this is that this is a little bit of projection, but if you have the audacity to keep a notebook for any period of time where you think that that you've had an insight that it can create something that is worthwhile enough, that you have written it down, that you think that it's going to improve people's lives or whatever, something that can be better. And you said that you've brought some of them to fruition. That seems to me like a curiosity practice. And then your love of questions. So you're poking around at the world as you know it. It seems to me that would be kind of that practice would be a source of, it's an IV drip of inspiration for seeing the world differently. That's me sitting in the cheap seats. Thoughts?
Well, you said the word audacity to do that and to write those down. Mm. And here I am on this side of the microphone saying, that what a compliment I just got. Where my mind was, you just said audacity. I think that is there's a slight insult in there, but I you know, don't take it as that at all.
No, for the record, that is not right. It to me, it's the most of the world around us would say stay small, but by you saying, I think that the world can be different and better, that is audacious. So I'm using it as a positive thing, not as a stay small thing.
Truly, again, thank you. There are many dots. You know, Steve Jobs said you can see your life in the rearview mirror. You can connect the dots by looking backwards, right? But here I am just being present and looking forwards most of the time. So I haven't connected those dots, and I truly appreciate that. I truly appreciate the statement and the question. So I think that really is part of the, some would say, weirdness or uniqueness that happens to collect itself as me. But every one of us has something unique and weird and is unique, or if you want to use the weird, right? But those are the things that people love. Those are the things that make you stand out, you know, that make you different and unique and interesting and that people want to learn about. So yeah, that was in a notebook that I didn't tell anybody about for years. I wasn't broadcasting that notebook. Sure. The calendar, right. Colander, and the some of these. That was the name, and the never did make that. I still think it would be a funny thing. So I put my ideas in a notebook, never thinking anybody was going to see them. But I knew at some point I was going to be able to open that notebook and make some of these things happen. And I have no idea if other people do that. I would actually encourage everybody to do it because you have so much ability to do whatever you want. And one of the things that I talk to my daughter about every day, this sentence, you can do whatever you put your mind to do. You can choose and you can make it happen. So again, looking backwards, you know, being that 10-year-old kid that didn't want to get out of the car to go ask those questions, or having absolutely no idea after I made it through college and was graduating what I would do next, where my friends all seemed to have these great career paths lined up waiting for them. I didn't, but I still kept that notebook going. And so, yes, that combination of weird and unique things, yes. What's that now? That's a software that I created, which literally writes stories, and then you click a button and you can hear them being told. It writes scripts, which isn't so unusual, but it's based on all the formulas that went into these commercials and went into all the different movies, the top grossing movies. That's what I've used as formats to write, and then choose one of 100 voices and this kind of thing. So that's Script Timer AI. I don't talk about that very often because it's got its own niche of people out there That's a part of me. And that was part of the website. Like, everybody's going to this page. I get thousands of people going to this page just to time their script. And I was like, I've always wanted to create some software. And I failed a couple of times before. And that one is successful. I'll tell you, 20 years ago, it was just coming across problems. I have a bad back. I got back surgery. It was impossible to make an appointment with this woman so that I could get my adjustment. And she's just a one person show. I was like, what if I could create something where people could just set an appointment with you? Again, fast forward, we did create it. It was thousands of dollars. She used it. She loved it. She didn't have to hire anybody, that kind of thing. Basically, what is that now? It's Calendly. It's Google Calendar. It's, you know, Acuity and, you know, all these different. So that, but I had a, those didn't have a name. They didn't exist 15 years ago. And I created it in a very isolated way. Didn't realize, host it on the web and all this kind of thing. But yeah, some of these have really been created. So I'm just finished with whatever is unique, whatever is weird, whatever you might be hiding in a notebook somewhere are the things that make you really cool and make you really interesting. And, you know, if they're out there to help people and help humanity or help animals, you know, help the world in some way, do what you can to bring those to life.
That's a great encouragement. It seems as though, as I mentioned earlier, the world pushes us to be small, but also, you know, this is the two paths in the forest where one is this desire to fit in and be the same. And then there's an element, certainly of me, it's only come out later in life, where there's the bravery or the willingness to pursue the weird things, the things that make us unique and the like. And I have just found so much freedom in stepping into that weirdness, if you will. And it's just so much more fun.
Yes.
I mean, those quirky little things, whether it's the colors you wear, the sayings that you make, the movies that you like, that's what makes us unique. And so let's figure out ways to celebrate that.
Yeah.
And in your case, you've been able to pull those things together and really turn them for good in helping other folks and businesses and the like.
And honestly, thank you, because at least once a year I'll do a project and take no money, sometimes covered costs, but helping Harvard solve malaria, right? Helping Stanford, their foundations, their nonprofit, get clean water, solve breast cancer. I did first engagement for nothing because I wanted to help them, because I had this weird combination of gifts. Who else could do this? Well, I can, but they can't afford it right now. So let me do this to help. So there's some real direct ways that we've helped too. But yes, what makes you weird and unique can also be in the most positive way. Those are things that make you special, like in a great way. That's the unique you. And you just don't find them without asking the question, what's cool about this? What's great about that? How's that unique? How can I help? How can I use that to help? You don't use those questions, you'd probably be beating yourself up. And like you said, living a small life. And so I don't think like that. I ask those questions of myself, and I'm thinking small or large or whatever it is, because to me, it becomes a comparison game. And there's only one thing that happens when you start comparing yourself with others, and then you're going to lose. It's a fast path to being upset, because there's always somebody with more. There's a lot of people with less. So let's just look at where you are compared to you yesterday. But for me yesterday, me 10 years ago, that's my comparison and my measurement. And so it's really cool, the things that I've done compared to the 10-year-old kid that didn't want to get out of that car and ask those questions, or even a year ago. I do want to comment on a couple of things, if you don't mind. As you know, the curated questions, they're like this podcast, I'm so interested in it, in listening to it. And I know the people that you've had on, and I'm honored to be sitting here. And the thing that just keeps occurring to me is, do people really know how incredibly important this is? And I'm not going to say it just for like now, for our own business life, our own personal life, our own psychology. But here I'm going to get a little bit weird again on you.
Bring it on. Come
all on. Right. I was like, too weird. But this is going to make the difference in the future, because artificial intelligence is flat out going to take over a tremendous amount of industries. It's wiping out my artists, my writers, you know, me as a writer. So I don't start my day in the same way anymore. Here's the way the day, you know, I can't say starts, you know, I have my morning routine, but my business day isn't going to be with like my big team call with 10 people. Now it's me sitting down and saying, what's the question I can ask my, you know, whatever, GPT Pro to get the best prompt? What's the question I can ask to get the best answer? What's the question I can ask to get the best result? And I'm not even kidding about giving, I'm asking it to give me the best prompt to ask it again. I just go in there. I need this result. I need you to be the best on earth at writing the prompt in the code format or whatever that you will respond to. It's like, well, how weird is that? But it's a question. We're asking questions, this thing. I'm not demanding it. You know, I'm asking a question so that it gives me a great answer so that I can go ahead and start a new session, ask it, and then I get these amazing results. It's built websites, like it's building videos and websites and all these things that we used to get paid tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars for. And now it's doing it in seconds. So this is incredibly disruptive, and the ability to ask the right question is imperative. It's critical. So it's everywhere now. And so that might sound, what is this guy talking about, crazy? But it's personal life, professional life, emotional life, your spiritual life, and the world we're entering with artificial intelligence being infused across the board. And you think, oh, it's not just, I'm going to turn on GPT or Perplexity or Manus, or I can name 100 of them. It's going to be in your life whether you like it or not, because the major companies are adopting it and putting it into our cars and putting it into the smart boxes and our phones and this. So, you know, unless you're off the grid, it's going to be a part of what you do. So start asking the right questions.
I completely agree. And to me, that's, as I was looking at the landscape, this is one, I think that I'm the only podcast out there talking about the meta skill of questions. There may be others, I'm not aware of them, but I don't know. Maybe I need to ask the GPT if there's others out there. But just that ecosystem of asking questions, because it is a skill. Anyone can get better at it. And so the practice of it, and exactly to your point, it's asking the AI. All of those prompts are just questions. Yeah. And so however we can get better and better at asking questions and knowing going forward, the future is really all about asking those questions and getting better at it and being more comfortable with it. I don't know if there's going to be question Olympics or anything like that, but just that concept of let's sit around the dinner table and talk about questions. What kind of questions did you encounter today? What might you have been able to use when you were at school? Questions might you have been able to ask? Or a myriad of different ways, just how can we increase the use or the periodicity in which we're playing with this tool, this skill, just so we'll get better? So that's why I love having different folks on with all different backgrounds, because your expertise over here in the work that you've done in advertising may help the listening poet or the teacher in school or whatever it is. I just think there's this cross-pollination that can happen and everybody wins. So I'm in complete alignment. So you and I can both be crazy together in the audacious world of AI that's being hoisted upon us. That's going to be tomorrow. Yeah.
On that, I'm going to yes and, okay? So Hollywood thing there, so for improv. And so yes and would be a challenge to go through a day and only ask questions. Go through, like, maybe your listeners of this. You will find at the end of that day that you didn't turn out to be the most interesting person in the room. You were the most interested person in the room, and you're going to get love. You know what I mean? People are like, I really love talking to that guy. I love talking to her. She's so, and all you did was ask the right questions again and again and get people to talk. you know, that's how this thing works. And so asking the right questions, it's honestly a really hard skill, because it's almost like we are taught, and then there's the question that was the asked at the end of the lesson, those three questions, and, you know, did we listen? I don't know if it's really even taught in a way that's amenable and acceptable to us. We've got to do this on our own, kind of feeling like I've got to write the question book now, or maybe we could do that together or something. So, but there are some people out there, because I do want to give credit to some people that have really had a big effect on me and improving my questions. I mentioned a couple. I've put together a course, and the resources that came up, I came across a hostage negotiator and FBI hostage negotiator. His name's Chris Voss, former hostage negotiator, now works with clients and brands. But Chris Voss, and I can't remember the name of his company, but wow, this is amazing stuff. How do you get people, because I'm looking into how do I get people to, you know, you use mirroring, right? So we kind of sit the same way. We look the same way. They lean back. You should lean back. You don't make it like it's, you know, literally like monkey see, monkey do, but some little gestures, and people start to feel like, oh, I am like this person. This person's like me. I don't know why, but I feel a connection because you're just mirroring them. And he added on that if there's a tough question that's asked, or an answer that comes at you that's maybe pretty opposed to what you're thinking, or maybe, and again, think hostage negotiator. I mean, there's going to be some hard demands coming. You just repeat the last three words or so of the sentence as a question, as a sincere question. And what happens, the other person expands on it so that you can understand. So it's not like a challenge. I don't know, let's, an example, maybe, where do you want to go to eat? Anywhere but that burger place. Anywhere but the burger place? Yeah. Yeah. I remember we got a stomach ache after we left. We all got a stomach ache. Their fries were terrible. We had, okay. Where do you want to go? How about the sushi place? You can literally go all day with these.
Yeah.
And then get, you know, yeah, the sushi was great. Sounds good to me. You know, but, and, you know, it's just, maybe it wasn't the perfect ending, but like, we're going to the sushi place. And you just ask the right question. And that mirroring piece, the last three or four words, is brilliant. It's brilliant. Use it here at home. And it's like, wow, that's really diffused what was about to become an argument. That's some high skill there. So Chris Voss is definitely one. I mentioned Neil Rackham's Spin Selling. I would like to put a personal note in, because I put years into the book, Your Story Can Be Your Superpower. So that's an amalgamation of things that I've learned, things I've done, and truly putting so much into that. So I put all the questions that I've used that have been effective, truly, in where to ask them, when to ask them, things like that. And somebody else, yeah, it actually is. It's Tony Robbins. I've got to throw Tony Robbins. I feel like I'm reluctant with this, but, and I guess I'm saying that because I mentioned my mom earlier. She thinks he's this charlatan, you know, just like, we went to the Tony Robbins. Oh, him, I can't. I'm like, really? I think it's amazing. And so he's really wonderful about asking yourself the right questions. So your personal mindset. So those two or three, I think, are absolutely pinnacle of the game as far as getting the right questions, using the right questions, whether it's business, personal, like I said, spiritual, you know, emotional, really amazing resources out there.
Hey, thank you for sharing the resources and also pouring all the questions that you've been asking into your book and making that available. I think that there's an important point to foot stomp on the categories of questions, as you mentioned, right? Personal, spiritual, all of that. It's, I think, an encouragement and challenge come out of that to say, if someone says, oh, I'm good at asking questions. Okay. Are you good at asking questions across all those categories? Are there categories that are taboo? Maybe because of past wrongs or hurts or whatever that is. I got it. Maybe it's time to gently start probing, because there may be some things that are unearthed and some additional growth and healing that can happen as a result. Obviously, get help where needed as well. I've found there are questions that will just wait. And at some point, it's time to spend time with them. And I've experienced growth out of those. It's been painful. I don't like going, as Kelly Starrett, the physical therapy guy. He always talks about with his foam rollers going into the pain cave, working on those muscles. Yes. And you know you're going to do it. So just do it intentionally and know that there's going to be some pain. But with that pain, the muscle moves easier. You get your range of motion back, and goodness comes out of that. But sometimes, yeah, the pain cave is necessary. Yeah.
100% true. So there's somebody very close to me, the way they handle painful circumstances, you know, in the present and 100% so in the past, is to bury them so deep that they can never pop out again. But they pop out everywhere. They can pop out at any time. They pop out like a volcano that's brewing. Person's walking around literally as a volcano. And it's not just this person that I know. Think about the road rage. Think about things that are going on out there. People are walking around burying so much that, yeah, the way to get them out, I talked about journaling. That idea journal was an offshoot of my actual journal. Which is, I'm going to write these things down because who am I going to talk to about this? And I gotta get it out somewhere. I gotta get it out of me. You know, I gotta put it out into the whatever, just out of me somewhere, writing it out. And it's incredibly therapeutic, incredibly helpful. You know, because sometimes you can look back and say, all right, that's what happened. And then this is the story I've been telling myself for years about what happened. And that's been beating me up horribly, or that a lot of people go through this. So can I change that? Now, the questions that you ask there to open that up and to be able to progress, you need to be asking the right questions. And I do think that's what I talked about before with the useful questions, on the positive questions. Let's put a positive spin on this, not at all, but make sure that there's a path that doesn't lead back to you beating yourself up, because there's all kinds of things that happen in the world that we as people, we just blame ourselves. And sometimes we'll blame other people. Some blame their parents or their brother or their sister or whatever. And some rightly so, right? But none of that matters. What is it? There's a great comment out there and I can't remember what it is exactly, but it's along the lines of somebody hurt someone and then that person's going to go on and just literally pay it forward for the rest of their life, unless they put an end to it by getting it out of them. It's writing it out. It's talking it out. Obviously, you know, with people that are qualified. And here's another interesting thing. The majority of people that are using GPT, like we talked about, are not just GPT, but AI, they're using it for therapy. They're using it for somebody to talk to, which has another version of a double-edged sword, because it isn't human. It's trained on it. I don't even want to get too deep into that. But until that is way advanced, use it as an outlet. I say, fine. That's like writing. You're using it as getting advice. You have no idea where that advice came from. It could be anything. So please don't depend on that. But getting these thoughts and traumas and experiences out of you, or and keep them, keep the positive side or keep the useful side with you. The only way that happens is by talking. And the only way people start talking is by asking themselves the right questions or getting somebody that's really qualified to ask those great questions. So I'm totally with you on that. Right? I mean, is that where we were?
Yeah. A good friend of mine, she was talking about how she has been using the AI to help process. And she said it is helpful in that it is very encouraging, but she doesn't use it to go deep into everything. It's just a couple layers down, if you will, to be able to get it out, think it out in front of her, because it'll ask some questions back to her just for clarification. And she's found that to be super helpful. You talked previously about back in the hunter-gatherer days, we are community creatures, and this connection and this ability to talk through, I saw the mastodon, but also let me tell you about this other stuff, and just I saw this great sunrise, or that connection and spending time together, that is who we are. That's how we're built. Clearly our pup is excited out there. I just went to an event hosted by Skip the Small Talk, and the whole concept there is just that, where it's like a speed dating thing and you're spending 10 minutes talking with people, but you're engaging in questions that are beyond just what do you do for work. I had an amazing time at that event. There's probably one person that, or he reached back out to me, but otherwise I'll never connect with any of those folks again. But it was a lovely time of spending the evening together, being able to just share and learn and to listen. That's what we're here for. And that, and being able to engage in that humanity and such. So as a resource that's out there, but just anytime we can connect with folks and have these conversations, I think it's just going to help them and help us. Yeah.
But you don't want to go through isolated, and it's, yeah, I'm with you. I'm looking them up right now. I had not heard of them, and there's actually a card deck.
Yep.
From Skip the Small Talk that I'm on Amazon about to buy. I mean, that was a pretty quick,
pretty nice. Quick.
You recommended it, just the event. And I'm like, this sounds great too. So I think I'll buy that when we hang up.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, as we start to go towards wrapping up, I like to ask folks, what is their right now question? So this is something beyond what's for dinner and am I going to do an exit my company or these big grandiose questions? So this is, what questions are you working with right now or have a place in your life right now that you're working with?
It's a great question. Look, completely candidly, my right now question is, where should I focus my time? Right. So, and it comes in many ways, and I'll switch that, and I'm solving it. Honestly, I am answering it, but it means multiple things. People talk about work-life balance, how much family time, and we're in the summertime right now recording this. So how much time should I be taking off to go and enjoy versus working? And I just started something new, a pretty big project that I feel committed to, and there are people depending on me. And so how much time do I put on that? How much focus do I put over here? It's going to be fair to me, to be fair to my family, and fair to my values, which align with being successful. But being successful means being with family and giving time. And it's not a checkbook thing. It is part of it. It is part of it.
Yep. It is a component. Okay. Yes.
But it's not all of it. So where do I focus? How do I focus? I don't know if that's a great answer to the question how much time do I focus here? How much time do I focus, with my family? How much can I take off from work and client work and that kind of thing and have that balance? Because the things that I keep reading lately are out of Silicon Valley and the most successful people, frankly, is there is no work-life balance. That's a bunch of BS. Don't buy into that. You shouldn't be starting a company or supporting a new client if that's what you think and want. I'm like, geez, that's pretty clear. So that's honestly that's my right now question. That's what I'm asking myself a lot. And I'm working through every day and trying to make it not more than 9-hour day. And some days are six.
Yeah.
Other days, there's no 0-hour days other than like completely unplugged a couple months ago. That's what I'm going through now. How about you?
For me, it's multiple fronts, but it really is about how do I grow the elements of curated questions. It's the podcasts and speaking workshops and coaching elements of this. Because I'm a few months into this new phase after retiring from the government, doing this delayed resignation program. So this is a whole new world for me, working full-time entrepreneur and working all those different elements, trying to understand where best to apply to time and making sure that I'm actually applying it for the most bang for the buck, if you will, or to get the most out of, all the while doing the mental processing of shutting down all the mental part of, oh yes, I'm a full-time employee, government, all of those kinds of things, and shifting industries and the like, So there's a patience that also needs to be extended because there's real change that's happening. And so, yeah, I am very much in the thick of this and actually had a pretty dark day the other day when I was talking with a writing coach. And the timing was actually very good that I had to talk with him because it was a little bit of, I think things are going off the rails, and off the rails just means going slower. Not that anybody's going to die, but so it's a real learning thing for me right now. And so it's embracing the newness, I would say, as a component of it. So I have a lot of questions are many parted, many are subparts as well. And yet I'm very much enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm confident that this is the work that I need to be doing, where I can add value and the like. So all of that's good. It's just a lot different than it was.
So I switched out of, for me, it was corporate America, not a government job, mm-hmm. you know, to go on my own. So the questions that you're asking, if this helps you in any way.
I'll take it.
Okay. The questions you're asking yourself are the questions that millions of us ask ourselves every day. Mm. So what I started telling myself, change is the only constant. Change is the only constant. It literally is like a mantra for a few years when I went on my own and just like, and then literally my friend's like, what the hell are you doing? You left Cisco. You know, you're running a region. Like, what the hell are you doing? Come back. You know, you're going to blow through all your money. You're going to, like, what is this? Like, who cares? No, I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to make movies. I've always wanted to, you know, like, it just sounds insane to people. Like, maybe you get that, you know, on podcast. What are you talking about? You've got a great, great, interesting subject, which is more than half of it. Yeah. But that was, you know, like, change is the only constant. And then as an entrepreneur and you're starting these things, you're always going to be juggling the balls. And then when you finally have it under control and you've put your finance, you know, it's like five things, right? So finance, marketing, sales, operations, human resources, right? So when you got either a person or you have segmented it and organized it so all those are in place, you're going to say, great, now what? I got to grow. I'm growing or I'm dying, or this is the way, you know, the Mandalorian, you know, this is the way. So
that's what I'm signing up for.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. So this is what you signed up for. This is part of it. But if you can find peace in that, then you're in a really good spot. And I'll throw out another thing. I have no idea if this is going to make the show or not, but there's somebody that's literally a lightning rod of opinion. You know, besides, you know, the president, there's a guy named Elon Musk, and he's a lightning rod of opinion, right? People typically aren't like, eh, whatever. They usually have an opinion, right? Yeah. But there's something that's, you know, right or wrong, like or don't like, you know, et cetera. There's something that I think can be observed about him that is pretty phenomenal. And that is his ability to take risks is probably 100-fold bigger than anybody else on earth. Yeah. And following his career, yes, they did well with PayPal, but risked, I believe, every dime. I believe he walked away with something like $90 million from the sale of PayPal and so on. Took all of that and started SpaceX, I believe, and Tesla. And it came down to something like, you know, New Year's Eve 2008, when both of them were going to be bankrupt if they didn't win contracts and get more money from investors like this one and this one. Something that goes through that, we talked earlier about celebrate your uniqueness and your weirdness and differences and things like that. That right. ability to take risks and be okay with taking risks makes a great entrepreneur. Again, I'm not saying I have whatever opinion about him you have is totally fine, yeah. but that ability to be a risk taker makes you more attuned to being an entrepreneur, growing a business, growing a small business, taking funding, whatever it is. And if it's like, it doesn't look like to me, it's scaring the hell out of you. And you just you're going to run out of the room screaming like your hair's on fire. Looks like you can handle it. And there are many reasons behind that, years of experience, savings, all those things that really matter. But that is that ability, the higher you are on that scale, I think is like a success meter. There's other things that come into it, but that's a big one. And guess what? You're already there. You're already doing this. You already had Seth Godin on this podcast. You know, I mean, you're doing all right. you're on the right path. Again, in my world, huge respect for him and his books and teachings and things like that. So you're in a good spot.
Please take 2 seconds to click the follow or subscribe button on your podcast player. You can set it once and forget tracking down each weekly episode. This makes your life easier and signals to the algorithms that the show should be recommended to other listeners. A simple act that can have an outsized positive impact on others.
I appreciate the encouragement. And it's all, I think in the Elon Musk story, I think that there's a reframing opportunity that I have for looking at the anxiety, relabeling it as risk, because then it gives it a name outside of me and I understand risk and being able to, where's it at on the risk cube, if you will, and is it likelihood and basically impact? Yeah, that's a helpful one that I think I'm going to be working with over the next couple of days.
Can I throw one more to you?
Please. Yeah.
This is one that was taught to me and I found it incredibly helpful my whole life. And it is a question. All right. Are there questions inside? And I just taught my daughter this. All right. I was speaking with, it doesn't matter. I'm going to leave the story out. I'm going to go right to it. If you're nervous about something, you're anxious about something, you're tense about something, let's pretend it's, you know, a speech you have to do, or frankly, are you going to make any money doing this podcast or, you know, whatever. Again, I have no idea what it is, but ask yourself that question. What happens when that moment is like coming, you know, the day of reckoning, you know, there it is, you're going to step on that stage or the bank statement's going to come in or whatever it is. What's that mean? Exciting, anxious. Think about what your body does. What's your body? I'm going to ask, what does your body do when you are anxious?
It's definitely hits me in the gut. That's where I feel it for me the most. And start sweating a little bit under the arms. So
breathing?
That's where I encounter it mostly in my body.
Gotcha. But so some people breathe a little more shallow. Heart starts beating a little stronger.
Yeah.
All right. Now, do you like roller coasters?
Yeah.
If you're about to step on a roller coaster, would you say you're excited or scared or anxious?
Excited because I will have faith in the mechanical elements to it, kind of like skydiving. I was nervous and doing it until I saw the efficiency of the skydiving team. Then I'm like, okay, this is my risk is low. Yeah.
Me too. With skydive. So I think I skydove near where you are, by the way. So here's the difference. Ready? You breathe faster when you're excited. Your heart pounds faster when you're excited. When you're excited, you might get a feeling in your gut. You're telling yourself something or you're asking yourself some questions. And when you're scared or nervous or anxious, the same physical elements are happening except for one change. Your mind is saying you're anxious, or you're excited, and you're scared, and that releases the acid in your stomach that gives you that stomach ache. Mm. So if it's all the same stuff and your body's telling you it's all the same stuff, how about just telling your mind, I'm excited? Can you say, I'm excited? Or am I excited about this? Or am I scared out on my mind? Mm. You know, am I really scared about going on stage? I've stood on many stages. It's just a piece of wood with some stairs going up. I have a back porch that's the same thing. I guess that's a stage too. I guess I'm excited. And I tell myself or ask myself, am I really excited? And then the stomach knot goes away and I'm excited. And then I tell myself something else again for me, because going on stage is a kind of a big deal. I do it a decent amount, but I don't get that ball of fire anymore because I say, I'm excited. I've always wanted to do this. So am I excited? Am I excited? And I'm not here for them to look at me. I'm here to serve them.
Yeah.
And I just go with, I'm here to serve. I'm here to teach them whatever I can teach them. I want them to be able to walk away with something new, a new thought, a new alignment, a new technique that will improve them in some way. I'm here to give. And then I got no nervousness. It like literally just happened with me. I'm like, I'm hoping that people that are listening to this get something out of this time together that improves them. And then I'm like, ah, that was fantastic. That was a great use of time. And I'm not nervous at all because I'm here to try to help. And I'm excited. So those things, so the excited piece and the there to serve have helped me for years. And I hope that maybe that helps you a bit.
Thank you. I'm sure that it will. Actually, yeah, just even thinking through, there were physiological changes just in the conversation. So, yeah, that's helpful.
And I'll go, cool. Thank you, Uncle Jeff, my crazy but psychiatrist uncle who passed away last year.
Thank you for that. As we look towards landing the plane here, as you knew that we were going to be talking about questions, is there anything about questions that we hadn't touched on that you were hoping that we would touch on?
There's two things that I'm glad you asked. There's two things that I'd love to have out there in the
Please.
In the world. So one is, again, we talked, the name has come up a few times here, and I've been sending out for years a question before my biggest calls or my biggest, you know, meetings. And so before I have a big meeting, I'll send out this question, and it's just, you know, everything, you know, we're set for next Thursday. You'll be meeting with the CEO or whatever. I send one question, and that is to that person that's sort of the decision maker in the room or the most important. What would make this meeting the most effective use of your time? Question mark. That's it. And it makes me feel great that I'm sending that out. I believe they really appreciate it, and I know that they do, the people that have answered it, you know, come back, and I guess what? I get the details that I need to deliver. Mm-hmm. To make this efficient, I want you to tell me, blah, 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 blah. Deliver this, ask us this, discover this, whatever it is. You know, the replies are perfect. So that question has been absolutely ideal. And I think even the people that don't answer it, my feeling is they appreciate it. You know, then maybe it's too big a question. They don't have time to get back to it or whatever it might be. But it changes things. I'm not coming in as Mr. Know-it-all, you know, and because I'm certainly not, and nobody is, but it changes the playing field into, I really want to help. I really want to serve. I want to do something. Like, what makes this useful for you? And so I got that question from a friend of mine. And preparing for this podcast, putting some ideas together, I was like, I wonder who came up with that question. You know, where did that come from? So I went back to the emails with my friend from years ago, and he said he had a call with Seth Godin, who, before their call together, sent him that question. And my friend's not like some nationwide global figure, best-selling author, and he got that question from Seth. So, well, that's amazing. And I had not remembered that's where it came from. And again, he might have asked a varied version or something, but how brilliant. How brilliant is this guy? So yet more props for this guy. And that the other thing is, so that's big, and I highly suggest people do that. The other piece is these questions that I have that are, yes, they're in the book, but I wanted to throw some out here. Just a thought, overarching thought, is if you're in sales or you're trying to influence, everybody's in sales in one way or another. We need people to listen to us. We need to convince our kids to go to a good school or get good grades or go for this. Encourage them to be their best, not telling them what to do, but encourage them to be their best. But you know, some of the questions that I think are that are great elicit emotion. They elicit an emotional response typically along with the answer. So I popped a couple down here and I'm happy to share with you. I think we covered these. I think we actually, because I was just talking with you this whole time. So I'm actually looking at them, but here are some. What are you struggling with right now? Your great question of what's your now question. Same thing.
Yeah.
What's going on with you right now? So, you know, what's been your again, this is fact finding, that kind of thing, but has there been a persistent, present problem, something that's recurring? Was there something happening there that we could, maybe it's psychologically wise, emotional, or maybe it's business wise, like let's dig in, let's see if we can fix that. How are you currently solving that specific piece there? What happens if you don't solve it? I'm like, that, what a great question that is. What happens if you don't solve it? Nothing. I keep on going along and everything's fine. Well, then the stakes aren't very high, you know? And so one of the things I'll say is I have these 10 commandments of great stories. And one of the 10 commandments is high stakes, like stakes meaning importance. How important is this? Is this incredibly important? If it wasn't incredibly important, we wouldn't go see that movie. It's important to those people in the movie, right? Whatever it is, it's, you know, a Marvel adventure, the world's going to blow up or the, you know, whatever it is. Oh, that's high stakes. All right. We're going to stay tuned here. Right. And if you're in a situation and it's, you know, imagine talking with your, you know, your husband or wife or partner and, you know, they're telling you a story and you don't seem like it's high stakes. You don't feel like, whatever. Well, they tune out. And they're probably not going to like it so much. If it's high stakes to them, it's got to be high stakes to you. You've got to relate on that level. If you can, see if the stakes are high. And if they're not, sometimes it's, doesn't really matter if that problem continues because it's not a big deal. Great, let's move on to the next one and try to solve that. There's always, what's your dream solution? What does success look like for you? Or if I come back in a year and I chat with you, what does your life look like at that point? Or what does your business look like at that point? What's it look like in a year? So like, let's take that vision and what does that look like? I'm like, oh, well, I'm a top rated this and my book's a best-selling author and I'm flying first class everywhere I go, whatever, right? Or I'm just spending time with my family. That is great. Whatever it is, get that vision, see if you can get that vision. So some of those, again, they're not perfect for every business situation. I don't ask those all in business, but various versions of those have been really important to me. So I've been asked them and I asked those. So I wanted to share as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the helpfulness of them and providing a little bit of a teaser. That's fantastic. So thank you. Thank you.
Very welcome. Very welcome.
Where's the best place for folks to track you down and see the things that you're excited about?
Thank you so much. I would love it if people would look me up on LinkedIn and just click connect or follow or whatever the button is. I put things out every couple of days. It's all useful. It's all value. And then on Friday, I usually do something that's fun. So, very video centric, a lot of playbooks and blueprints and how to. My whole goal is to be fun and useful at the same time. So LinkedIn, Mari Rogo, and my main website is RIP Media Group. And that's Rogo Interactive Productions, RIP. RIP Media Group is the, is the company.
Nice. Yeah.
And that was made up on the spot. At that Sony meeting I actually told you about earlier. And in the meeting, oh, tell us, where do I find you? And I'm like, RIP Media Group. And I went home and I built a website that night. I'm like, I don't even know how to do this. And that name stuck.
By URL. Now.
GoDaddy, help me. So ripmediagroup.com. But LinkedIn's wonderful. And I actually do get back to everybody. And I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear if this was helpful.
Sweet. Thank you for this conversation. Thank you for jumping in the Wayback Machine, telling some of the stories, and just really exploring what questions have looked like for you. Thank you for being a part of the Curated Questions community, and I'm just grateful that you said yes. Thank you.
Very kind of you to have me here. Thank you so much.
Ken here. I trust this wide-ranging and personal conversation with Mari Rogo provided tools and insights for you to carry into your life. Links are available in the show notes and at the Curated Questions website. Mari gave an audience challenge to spend a day just asking questions. As a fan of Tim Ferriss's comfort challenges, I encourage you to take on the challenge and to see how it impacts your day and benefits your relationships. For the record, this is different than the encouragement to keep poking your teenage daughter in the leg saying, "What you doing?" I have proven that to be effective only for getting the evil side eye. As mentioned at the top of the episode, the Curated Questions website homepage includes a link to record your answers to questions for potential inclusion into an upcoming episode, and the opportunity to sign up for the newsletter that will hit your inbox every 2 weeks. Reflection and insights are what make our activities memorable. So these are four takeaways I have from the conversation with Mari. Number one, from transaction to transformation through one question. Why is this important to you? This single question, asked 15 years apart between Mari's telecommunications and Hollywood careers, transformed interactions from transactional to relational. The question revealed that people don't just buy products or services, but rather they invest in relationships with people who genuinely care about their outcomes. When someone asks why something matters to you, they're not just gathering data for manipulation. They're creating a space for authentic connection and long-term partnership. This question is not limited to those in sales, but rather, if you understand why what you do matters, it can transform how you spend your life. Question: what would change in your professional relationships if you consistently ask people why your work together truly matters to them? Number two, from features to feelings through story architecture. Mari discovered that listing features is forgettable, but sharing stories creates emotional imprints that last. Stories work because they mirror how humans have always learned, not through data dumps, but through memorable narratives that connect to our experiences and feelings. Inspired by a story I heard about a NASA janitor telling President Kennedy his work helped land a man on the moon, I would walk with the janitorial staff looking at the pictures of ships on the walls to remind them that their work helped to build and maintain Navy ships at sea. The cave painting survives. The specification sheets get thrown away. Question: what story could you tell about your work that would help people feel a transformation rather than just understand the transaction? Number three, from conformity to competitive advantage through embracing weirdness. Whatever is unique, whatever is weird, whatever you might be hiding in a notebook somewhere are the things that make you really cool and make you interesting. Mari's combination of business acumen, Hollywood storytelling, and technical invention created a unique market position that couldn't be replicated. What makes you different isn't a liability to overcome, it's an asset to leverage. The world pushes us towards conformity, but competitive advantage lies in the authentic combination of your unusual interests and experiences. Insights are discovered in the fringes. Question: what unique combination of interests, experiences, or obsessions are you hiding that might actually be your greatest professional asset? Number four, from anxiety to excitement through reframing questions. Mari encouraged us that if you're anxious, nervous, or tense about something, ask yourself that question: am I excited about this or am I scared? The physiological responses to excitement and anxiety are nearly identical. Increased heart rate, faster breathing, gut sensations. The only difference is the story your mind tells you about these sensations. By consciously asking, "Am I excited?" instead of accepting, "I'm anxious," you can literally change your body's chemical response and your performance outcome. Question: what situation that currently makes you anxious might actually be your body's way of telling you you're excited about the possibility? Now it's your turn to share what resonates with you. To those on the other side of the speaker, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. So until next time, keep questioning.